To order the December 8th Public Finance Advisory Committee meeting, and want to take this opportunity on behalf of the board to wish each and every one of you a wonderful holiday season and prosperous new year. Madam Treasurer over here was telling us that her collections are up $180 million right now.
Wow.
We have, as of yesterday, we are about $170 million more than at the same time last year. So we appreciate those of you who may have paid early. It does make these last few days a little less hectic, and rates have gone up a little at the banks, but not enough to make a whole lot of difference. So it's been good.
And the stock market's rising. Consumer confidence is up. Is this going to be a good year? With that, can we have roll call starting from my right? Stage left.
Good afternoon. Michelle Geary, CFO.
Eric Woolery, Auditor Controller.
Carl Groner, present.
Tom Hammond, present.
Wallace Rodecker, Vice Chair.
John Moore, present.
Sherry Friedenrich, present.
And Lisa Hughes, Chair.
Chairman, before we start, we lost a national hero this afternoon. John Glenn passed away. I wonder if we could have a moment of silence in his honor.
I think that's a wonderful idea. Did you all hear that? If we could. I want to thank you for that. I do want to share that on my way over, my assistant, who is in her early 20s, and I'll leave it at that, I looked at my phone and I said, John Glenn just died. She goes, who's that?
Godspeed.
Yes, Godspeed for those, and I explained. The world's changing. All right, with that, may we have the approval of the October 6, 2016 minutes. We have all been provided them. Do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Are there any questions, comments, additions, or deletions to the October 6 minutes?
Yes.
Would you please?
Yes. First is a comment. I'm wondering, going forward, if we could have the minutes numbers, page numbered. They're not numbered, but on the second page of the minutes, in the one, two, three, fourth paragraph, starting with Ms. Lester, agreed, you've got that. That's obviously not what you meant. I think it's at the, so if we could correct that.
Suzanne Lester, CEO Public Finance. Yes, we will correct that. And yes, we will make sure in the future that the pages are numbered.
Thank you. That's all.
I wasn't there, so I'm going to have to abstain as well.
Okay.
Any further comments, questions? I'm going to call the question. All in favor?
Aye. As amended.
And two abstains?
Two abstentions.
It passed. Shall we proceed with approval of the calendar of meetings?
Good afternoon, committee members. Suzanne Lester, CEO Public Finance. We're requesting that your committee approve a calendar of meetings for next year, 2017. We've kept with our regular schedule, which is the second Thursday of each month. There is one exception. It's next December, where we're scheduling for December 7th of 2017, and that's to coincide with our Board of Supervisors schedule. The last board date of the year is December 12th, so we would want to go a schedule for the Thursday before. So we're requesting your approval of the schedule.
Move to approve.
Any second?
I'll second.
Any discussion?
Just a comment that these are always floating dates. We all know that.
Yeah.
Agreed. We start with a plan, and then we adjust as necessary.
We put it in pencil for those of us who still use pen and pencil.
Already got mine in.
Which aren't too many of you out there. Call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Listen, I'm still blown away. I had to explain who John Glenn was, so yeah, bear with me. Yeah. All right. Receive and file public finance status report. Ms. Lester?
I'm going to ask Lewis McClure, a public finance manager, to come up and give the status report.
Thank you, Suzanne. Just a brief status update from your prior meeting. You may recall in early October, both PFAC and the board approved the issuance of the Community Facilities District 2016-1 bonds. And that's to public finance the infrastructure related to the Rancho Mission Viejo development down in South County. And on October 26th, the county did price the CFD bonds in the amount of $93.1 million. Bonds were sold in a public sale by Piper Jaffrey as senior managing underwriter, Raymond James as co-manager, and Alamo Capital as selling group member. The bonds are 30-year bonds with yields ranging from 0.9% to 3.86% and a true interest cost of 4.12%. The principal amount and the premium together generated $94.4 million in project funds and will be used to finance street, storm drain improvements, school facilities, water facilities, and the extension of Avenida La Pata. If you have any questions, we're available.
Do we know what the current yield is on those now? I know the bond market's been going down since the election.
No, we don't. I think we'd have to look into the secondary market to find out.
All right.
Mr. Hammond?
You said from 0.9 to 3.9, how could that average 4%?
Premium.
Yeah, the premium on the bonds and then any cost of issuance and things like that to get rolled in.
All right.
Any other questions? You look like you were going to say something. No? Any comments? Do we need to accept it?
Yeah, we're requesting a receive and file.
So moved. Do I have a motion to receive and file the report?
I'll make the motion.
Second?
Second.
Any further comments, questions? Call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Next agenda item, the approved qualified panel for the underwriter firms. And who's going to present, Ms. Lester?
Suzanne Lester, CEO of Public Finance. Good afternoon again, committee members. CEO Public Finance is requesting your committee approve a requalification of our underwriter panel. The previous qualified panel of underwriter firms was approved by your committee on April 9th, 2013. We tried to requalify the underwriter panel a little bit more often. Our goal is every 2 years. The municipal advisors every 3 years, and the bond and disclosure council every 4 years to stagger it. But the underwriters seem to change firms more often, so we like to requalify them more often. We sent out requests for qualification packets to the underwriter firms who've signed up on the county's electronic procurement platform, BidSync. Giving an interest in underwriters. Responses were received from 22 underwriter firms. The evaluation panel consisted of a manager from the CEO budget office and two public finance managers. Firms were requested to provide their experience in several areas of financing. Based on the information that was provided by the firms, public finance staff first reviewed each proposal to ensure that minimum qualifications were met. And thanks to your committee recommitting us to our reference check process, this process took a little bit longer because we did thorough reference checking of each one of these firms. Only firms that are recommended and approved to be on the qualified panel will be sent RFPs in the future and considered for future deals as they come up. Your report, the staff report, shows the firms that are recommended. All the firms that were on our panel, our current panel, are recommended again, and with some new firms being added. Only one firm was not recommended due to a lack of experience. With your committee's approval, the recommended panel will be presented to the board for approval by the Board of Supervisors on December 13th. And I'm available, and we've got representatives from each firm here to answer any questions as well.
Do I hear a motion to approve before a discussion?
I'll move it.
Okay. Second? Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All right. Any discussion?
I have a question on the underwriting firms, the 21 that were currently on our list. There was one that didn't make it, you said, due to experience. Did we get any change, any material change notice from any of the 21, we'll call the number 21, that were previously approved, that they've lost people or added people during this period?
We didn't receive a material change notice, but we did request resumes and a staffing plan so that we could see, you know, they had to identify who would be working on our account, and we would confirm that when we send out an RFP for an actual deal. We'll ask them to recommit.
Did you cross-reference that to the current people who were there that they submitted earlier? Did you check what they submitted now to who they had on their list before?
Well, when we reference checked, we did. Now, if that's changed since we reference checked, we might not necessarily know that. But I do believe that would be identified when we actually send out an RFP.
Thank you.
Did the reference checking yield any significant information or interesting information? Or was it a waste of time?
Not really. I mean, you know, I guess it gave us a sense of comfort, right, to, and I must say, and I think one of my managers, Susie Ortiz, that did all of these will say, you know, it was very time consuming because it's difficult, you know, to get people to break away from their busy schedules to respond, but she was very persistent, and I believe we got a good response.
I would hate to have proven them without reference checking if, right, God forbid, something should happen.
Austin, would you tell us what's involved in reference checking?
Well, we develop a little questionnaire, and we send it out to the references identified in an email. And I know there were some telephone follow-ups, you know, asking questions about, you know, what types of deal have they worked on with you? What was their role? Reconfirming their role in the deal, and you know, did they were they accurate? Did they provide good customer service? Were they timely in their delivery? Was there anything that didn't go right or that could be improved? You know, questions like that.
Did you? Is there a way, or I know that there are firms that will do litigation checks and SEC checks and filings and so on and so forth. Do we use something like that for these firms?
No, we do not.
Is it available? I mean, I'm sure there's firms that do that for you.
Well, we haven't checked into it.
Yeah. Well, that was my question. I'd written down here, it's kind of, well, go ahead, you go first.
Yeah, Michelle Aguirre, CFO, if I can just comment. We're actually, our procurement office is actually looking into possibly having a contract for those services. So they're currently researching that as an option for the county.
In this day and age, I'd say that would be a recommendation.
Yeah.
Why don't we do that when we talk about it, maybe make a motion or discuss that as a separate recommendation.
Sure.
I think we need to do that. Because my question, which dovetailed in on that, was what do we do to assure ourselves of the capital requirements and liability coverages, et cetera, that would be necessary for these firms to participate with us? What formal structures do we have to assure that it's coverage? And that's what they're doing, right, these research firms?
I don't know what the exact scope of the service would be. I'm assuming at this point that would be included, but because our procurement officer is just starting this process, I don't have all the details. We just talked about it maybe a week or two ago.
Ms. Lester, can you shed some light on that?
Well, when we do an RFP, we definitely ask about the ability to, you know, capital, the firm's capital capacity and their ability to underwrite bonds. Now, you know, some of the big firms that we've worked with in the past, you know, they're public financial statements, but, you know, we can require financial statements from a small firm that might not be public or we might not be as familiar with.
I assume all the references that you got came from the individual firms? They supplied the references?
Yes, they did.
Were you able to, in talking with any of the references, to determine anybody else they'd done work from? Sometimes when they're working with you, they may say, you know, we've also done this for other companies. Were you able to get any other references besides the ones they furnished us?
We did not. Actually, it took a couple months to get these done. So we did not pursue others more than what was furnished to us.
Your list of 21 are the same 21 that we've been doing business with before?
I think there's about 14 that we've done business with before. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. But we've added a bunch of new ones.
Which is what was my next question. Were any new ones invited to be added to that list, or how would they get on there?
When we issue the request for qualifications, it's an open call to anybody who has gone on our BidSync platform to say, I would like to be an underwriter.
Okay, so they can apply online and get added to the list of consideration.
That's right. And, you know, some of our consultants for other financial services, you know, will put out a BidSync RFP, and it'll be sort of frightening because we'll have about, you know, 2,000 downloads or looks, and we're, you know, you're thinking, oh my gosh, I hope we don't get 2,000, you know, proposals. So this is our process to narrow it down from anyone in the universe who might possibly be interested to actually folks that meet the minimum requirements.
Are any of these firms foreign-based? There's a couple I don't know, but.
I don't believe so.
That's an interesting question. Do we have a requirement that they not be hold foreign interest?
The requirement is that they are legally permitted to do business in the state of California.
That's it?
Yes.
Well, that's probably enough. I mean, I don't.
We have another, you know, more detailed drill down when we're actually doing an RFP for an actual transaction.
Do you have access to, I'm sorry, I jumped
no.
in front of
no,
you.
No.
Do you have access to any other counties that have done similar financing that they put bids out? Have you looked at any of those to see what type of firms that they're attracting?
Not specifically, but in the references, a lot of the references are other counties that we call. And when I'm, you know, just in the course of my position reviewing other municipalities' official statements, I see the same firms that we work with listed on those official statements.
Madam Treasurer?
Thank you, Chair. First off, I want to thank staff for using the same ASR format we use. I know I asked for that a while, and I think I probably thanked you last time, but it really makes it easy because I think this is the same thing other than any minor changes that may be made. So I do want to thank staff. Obviously, this was a large task to do because you do send it out through BidSync, and I'm so glad that we did get a good response, and I think, you know, widening the net is important because this isn't the selection of any individual one. This is really the pool that we are going to go to when we actually have a next financing, and I think having that competitive process is very effective. With that, I had just a couple of questions, if I might, and my first question was, it would be helpful in future if we maybe put location, and I think that came up on just where they're headquartered at, or if they have an office in California. Kind of following that is some of them, it looked like you had specifically had California in the comments and others did not. And I'm not probably as familiar on the legal requirements because I'm not sure of how other states handle some of these, if these financings are just vanilla across all states or if there are quite significant differences. So that would be something that would be important, I think. Again, I like having a wide net because then it does provide opportunity. But that next, you know, top six counties in the nation. We do want a very qualified person to come. We're not, you know, because of your time, you know, you want someone who's really going to be a professional that's going to be able to get you through the process and be able to provide those great things. But I think that certainly is important. I didn't see as much. You also did a nice job of breaking out the comments into both the firm and the individual. And I think, you know, that's important because this list is going to be here for, is it 2 years? 2 years. So people do change. And obviously, I think a firm that has a commitment to keeping someone is important because, you know, that firm is, going to do that underwriting for us. And but certainly that individual is also important. So I think in that next stage, that obviously is key, on both sides. It's just one of the evaluation points that I think is important because some of the firms didn't have, but they had a senior official. So I'm assuming this might be the first time that they've done some of these areas. And again, when we get to that next stage, I think it's just important. Following up on one of the things that I know we do for the board, and I'm not as concerned about not putting it here, but it would have been maybe nice to have a column for those that have already done business with the county. I'm assuming, on our ASR guidelines, you talk about, are you happy with the service you've provided? You know, you have them all here. I'm assuming that was part of the evaluation, but you were happy with those because we don't want someone who we had a bad experience to go on the list. I mean, they need to recognize that they need to put, you know, have a good experience with us for us to stay on the list. So I'm assuming that my question to you would be the ones that have done prior service that are on the list, you've been happy with their service.
That's correct.
Great. So I just wanted to clarify that. And again, I know we're not selecting an individual, and that's a board requirement when you select that person that has prior experience. You know, are you happy with their or satisfied with their services? And then on the references, I do want to thank you. I think that's an important part because we don't want, I mean, we want a good pool, but it does get unmanageable if you have so many that it's just going to spend all your time with going through. So I think that checking references was important. In this case, it looks like we only actually took one out, so the references were good. You know, one of the things we might consider, certainly maybe for sure for the next phase, you know, maybe not this phase, is, you know, finding out what deals they've actually done and then calling them. I think that was some of the comments from another board member, that they're going to, of course, give you someone who's, you know, going to give them a great reference. So it is good to contact them and follow up. And it sounds like you went through a very thorough process. You put a questionnaire together. You emailed it. That was excellent. I think that was a great job because that hopefully makes your job a little easier. But I do think that finding out those that they've done deals with and being able to randomly call them also is important for that next stage, because if they weren't happy with them, we certainly want to know and evaluate that. Is there a specific reason that occurred, and there could be a valid reason, or is it something that they just didn't provide the service, and that service is very critical to us? I think...
May I?
Oh, yes.
Chair, may I make a suggestion? I would think that maybe a way to synthesize these concerns, I think they're good, is if the firms don't just provide references, but typically the firm would provide a list of everyone they've done a transaction with. And so we have those contacts. We may not have the best person, the phone number, but maybe if we have that full list and we have the contact information for all those people, perhaps in the future we could do two that they recommend and then maybe one randomly that we pick or something. But I would imagine the firm has something that lists everybody, right? And so we already have that, and we could just change the policy of who we're calling, not just the cherry-picked ones, but maybe some of their best references, and then maybe some just people off the list randomly.
And maybe we go back just 3 years, so because some firms it'll just be
so
a phone book.
It's ancient history. Yeah, great idea.
And we do request an appendix. It's usually in an appendix, a list, and we ask for the last 3 years, and so we can look at similar deals and contact that municipality. And oftentimes in the actual RFP process, we're asking for a proposal, you know, how should we structure this and provide a case study of something similar that you've done that you're, you know, presumably proud of, that worked well, that we can discuss as well.
I have to say that having been appointed to two state boards and bar licenses, et cetera, they get real sneaky. They will ask for your references, and then they ask the references to give you six names of people, or six references they individually do, and you're holding your breath that those are the ones that think of you favorably, but something like that, and they respond in writing if they're going to. You'd be amazed what you get.
Yep.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I just had one last question, and again, the process, you know, it looked like you went through a thorough process. This might be for that next stage, is obviously as an underwriter, there is a time, depending on the market, where all of the bonds may not have sold, and so that financial ability of that firm is important to be able to take the remaining bonds in-house and then to go ahead and sell them to be able to commit to that final price to the county on it. I didn't see anything in there. Again, this one isn't as concerned, other than we do want to make sure we are getting the candidates who actually are, you know, can do a bond issue of a size that we think the county could do. And for the next stage, we would definitely want to consider those types of things. And was that considered at all, or is that something that we could at least consider for next time?
Through the chair, committee member Friedenrich, I can't recall if we asked it during this process, but we absolutely do ask that question. Your ability and your willingness.
Right.
Because some have ability, but not necessarily willingness to take down bonds that are unsold.
Right, and we might even, in the next one, how many times have you had to take down bonds so that we can see what is their actual experience, so that we could say, and if they say never, not that, again, we just don't know what rates are going to be the next time we end up going out, and we do, that certainly is a fallback to help with that. I mean, we want a professional that's going to be able to assist us, not that we expect them to take all the bonds, because certainly we want the pricing to be accurate, but it is one of those areas that sometimes you have some of the unsold inventory. So thank you. That was my question. Thank you, Chair.
We have been, and we want to congratulate you. I guess, about a year ago, we talked about giving us the follow-up reports on what happened.
Yes.
And that's been most helpful. But have you been keeping track now, or have you ever, sort of a percentage of completion report, what the results were? Were all the bonds, when were they completed, or what was left unsold, or what was taken down? Do you have any kind of reports like that?
Typically, we do get kind of I'll call it a closing book from our underwriter, and we get a list of, you know, the sales, because we're involved in the process. Well, we observe the process online. It's kind of fun, actually, to be watching the orders come in. And then we, you know, at the end of the order period, you know, we see, you know, where the gaps in various maturities are. And then we have another conversation with the underwriter desk to talk about, you know, if, you know, how we might adjust the pricing scale. And then in the end, you know, we do get a list of all, we do know who the buyers are and if the underwriter has taken any into inventory.
So you do have those, do you keep statistics that are readily available?
Not readily available, but we have them, and we, I'm sure we could gather those.
Who makes the decision on the county's part whether to reduce the price on the bonds?
It's a team effort, but the ultimate decision in that situation is with me. We gather as a team, and we listen to the underwriter desk, and they talk about the market that morning. We listen to our municipal advisor. Usually, you know, we might step aside from the conference call to have a little powwow, you know, meeting just with the county and our financial advisor. We'll discuss. We'll come to consensus. We'll go back and usually agree.
You have a number of comments here. It says top ranked on several of the firms. What does that mean? How did you get to that?
Susie Ortiz in our office, when all the proposals came in, the statement of qualifications, she, this is a raw data spreadsheet that's several pages long, and so that the evaluation committee wouldn't have to be going page by page counting, you know, how many years experience, what type of deals. She compiled this spreadsheet for the evaluation committee, and so top rank means, you know, either they've done the most of that type of deal, or the principal has the most years of experience, and it might be overall in California or in a specific area.
Further questions to my left?
Yes, sir.
Just one thing, I have to recuse due to conflict on the vote.
Okay, anybody else have to recuse? You're okay? You don't have to. She's looking over there, Andrew's
making sure I don't think there's anything, because I do school bonds, but I don't think that's a conflict of
yeah.
I have one question. When we go to the actual process, now we've got the list, and you come down, particularly with the bond counsel, as far as references, do you check the state bar for the individual attorneys to see if they're in good standing or what kind of records they have? It's a public document.
You know, we ask the question of, you know, any disciplinary actions. And I'd have to say recently, you know, the selections have been, you know, people we know. I believe we would do that in the future on
it's
our.
It's real simple. I mean, on the bond council.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, we haven't, but
Dalton's
no, I think
vendors.
That's part of our reference check process.
I will strongly suggest, because I know a lot of lawyers where I have had to say, get out. I didn't know that that was there, and I've known them for many years. It's a 30-second process to put the name in, and it'll pop up. So I would strongly suggest you do that. It's a computer check.
Agreed. Point
well
taken.
Yes.
Any further comments? Call the question to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
I thought we already did.
We did that.
We did that.
That's the question.
Now, I'm just calling the question. All who can, I call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any oppose? Mr. Hammond, you had some comment or.
Well, I don't want to make more work for the public finance department, but I think your recommendation, your suggestion of hiring some firm, I don't expect your staff to be able to do this, but I'm sure that there's some way that we could check for SEC actions or class action lawsuits. Everybody has litigation. I mean, we know that. But is there something major or macro out there or judgments and what have you? And there must be some service or some way that you could hire somebody to do that.
Well, through the chair, Member Hammond, sounds like I'm going to be providing some input into our county procurement office's development of this program, that public finance will have a request for that service to be available to us, because it sounds like that there our central procurement office is just embarking on this process, and they probably need feedback as to what kind of checking services are needed. So we'll be sure to provide our input in public finance.
Yeah, I would think just macro things like cease and desist or SEC actions or things of the major. I mean, I'm sure if you start looking into Citibank, I mean, that will be endless, but.
I do, as just a matter of curiosity, tend to Google people.
We Google everybody.
I don't know. Can we just leave that as a recommendation, or do we need a motion?
Well, you know, I at the suggestion of the CEO's office, which brought it forward, I would like to agendize this a little further down the line to see what's happening. Is that possible?
Yeah, I can provide an update maybe on the status at our next meeting.
May we do that, Ms.
And in the meantime, Suzanne can work with our procurement officer, Rob Richardson, to provide what a scope would look like, at least related to the public finance items.
Maybe we could see a draft of that scope. Might be helpful for us. We'll
provide whatever we have available at the next meeting.
Well, sounds like a great idea. Thank you for bringing that up. Don't want to cause you more work, but we'll put it on the next meeting.
Sounds like it might.
All right.
It might.
Yes,
help.
I know you're looking at me.
No, it might
help.
It might help.
Yeah. And you won't have to do those references.
Right.
Okay, back to the next item. I believe the next item on our agenda is approval of the issuance of the 2017 POBs, the pension obligation bonds. Who's going to present?
Suzanne Lester, CEO, Public Finance. And before we get started with our presentation, we have a little musical chairs to play. Angie Daftery is representing the treasurer tax collector in the Orange County Investment Pool on the process. So I'd like to welcome Ronnie Megsaisai from County Council's office, who is representing the county.
And welcome. Yes.
I also, as my counsel is stepping off the dais, I also need to abstain. Do I need to actually step off the dais here? Yes, so I need to step off the dais, and we'll be available if you have any questions.
You've been thrown out of better board meetings.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we can talk about her.
Yeah.
I'm still here.
Thank you, Chair Hughes and members of the committee. Suzanne Lester, CEO Public Finance. Today, CEO Public Finance is requesting your committee's approval to issue the 2017 pension obligation bonds to prepay the county's fiscal year 2017-2018 employer contribution. Just to provide a little bit of brief background, on July 18th, 2016, the Orange County Employee Retirement System Board approved an early payment program option allowing plan sponsors to prepay their fiscal year 2017-2018 employer retirement contribution by January 17th, 2017. In return, plan sponsors would receive a 4.5% discount. On October 6, 2016 and October 25, 2016, PFAC and the Board of Supervisors approved the concept of issuing 18-month taxable pension obligation bonds to prepay that fiscal year 2017-2018 employer contribution. The 2017 POBs would be issued in an amount not to exceed $400 million. The expected issuance amount is $375 million. As in the past, we have several county departments that have the ability to prepay the employer contribution using available cash resources. The county treasurer has agreed to purchase the bonds for the Orange County Investment Pool Extended Fund. The bonds would be structured similar to previous POBs with 5 fixed rate maturities ranging from August 1st, 2017. So we deposit the money at OSERS by January 17th of 2017. They are investing the monies. Then the county starts paying that back starting August 1st, 2017 and maturing a final maturity on June 29th, 2018. And the way that's paid back is through biweekly payroll collected from county departments and then paid back to the investment pool. The estimated total interest cost is 1.2%. As I mentioned, the source of the debt service payments to repay the retirement expense is collected from each county department during the July 2017-2018 year. The estimated net budget savings to the county is $13 million. If the county did not issue the POBs, county departments would be expected to absorb that additional amount from their budgets in fiscal year 2017-2018. And at this time, I just want to comment. There was a couple of things that were, a couple of correspondences that were sent out last week, some additional information that we sent out as a result. It's really as a result of the discussion that occurred at the last PFAC meeting. I know that Chair Hughes and Vice Chair Rodecker weren't at the meeting, but I think most of it is reflected in the minutes. So we provided a spreadsheet showing each one of the county departments and showing the gross retirement expense and the amount of the prepayment, so reflecting the discount and the savings to each county department. We also provided a couple of pages from a publication. I think we provided the link to that publication as well. It's a great publication. It's very interesting. OSERS publication called OSERS by the Numbers. The pages that we provided showed for calendar years, and OSERS is on a calendar year. Their fiscal year is a calendar year. The county's is on a fiscal year. The calendar years 1986 through 2015, two-thirds of the time, the actual investment return exceeded the assumed rate of return. Each year the POBs have been issued, the discount that the OSERS board has approved has been equal to the assumed rate of return or less, as is recommended this year. The assumed rate of return is 7.25%. The amount that was approved of the discount, the prepayment discount that was approved by OSERS is 4.5%. And just as a point of FYI, as of October 31st, 2016, the actual OSERS rate of return is 6.91%. The other page we sent out was just informational. The historical OSERS funded status was provided. The county as a plan sponsor makes up about 75% of OSERS. There are other plan sponsors as well, such as the Orange County Fire Authority, Orange County Transportation Authority, Transportation Corridor Agencies, and others. There was also additional correspondence that was sent clarifying the difference between the county's 18-month program and long-term bonds that have been used by other jurisdictions to finance the unfunded liability, which we do not recommend. I'm happy to answer any questions, additional questions that you might have about that. Now, the next steps in the process would be to request board approval next Tuesday, December 13th. We will meet with Sherry and her team and through our financial advisor, K&M Public Finance, to come up with the pricing parameters. We've discussed it a little bit, but we'll firm those down. K&N will prepare a fair pricing certificate that will be for the record, and the transaction would close by January 17th, 2017, which is the required date to have that prepayment to OSERS. So that concludes my presentation. I'm available to answer additional questions, and we've got Bill Morgan from Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe here as well. And Sherry Friedenrich from the Treasurer's Office, representing the Orange County Investment Pool and their perspective.
Madam Chairman.
I've got one on the left and one on the right here. How about we'll start with you?
I think at our last meeting, which you weren't in attendance, we had a discussion about what the actual benefit to the county was as far as the savings. And the question came up that if the portfolio underperforms, that shortfall is then added back into the obligation for the county. You're saying that we're at 6 point something and change?
6.91%.
So it doesn't appear in 1 month unless the market goes crazy.
Right. And just another, just a point, which it can be a good or a bad. OSERS has the funds for 18 months. So their annual year to date isn't completely reflective. In most cases, it's been beneficial that OSERS has been able to have that 6 extra months to invest the funds.
I just want to make sure we're all aware that it's not a hard, fast number what we're talking about in the savings, that we could have more liability if the market underperforms.
I want to make a comment, but who had their hands up? Mr. Hammond?
I'd like to ask Mr. Woolery. He sent this memo out, this advisory about these long-term financing, but it's my impression that what this describes is illegal. I didn't realize. I was under the impression that municipalities couldn't borrow money just to arbitrage. Isn't that what that is?
Well, these are taxable, and municipalities have issued them.
They have, but I mean that's okay. I mean you can do that if. I mean, it's not illegal, but there is something about not arbitraging.
We do, so for all of our bonds, we have a consultant. It's an arbitrage rebate consultant. They prepare calculations each year, and if it's determined there's been an arbitrage, we do reporting annually with a five-year calculation date, where if there's something due to the IRS, we send a check.
But there's a distinction between taxable and non-taxable. Is that what you're saying? In other words, you can arbitrage taxable bonds and you can't non-taxable?
We do the arbitrage reporting for all our debt, taxable or non-taxable.
May we inquire of counsel? Is that a true statement?
There are restrictions on arbitrage, but I'd feel more comfortable having our bond counsel answer those more specific questions.
I saw him jump up. You had that look of wisdom on your face. Enlighten us, sir, in your name.
I'm Phil Morgan with Orrick, Harrington in Sutcliffe. The theory for these long-term pension obligation bonds, the question was, are they valid or are they illegal? The theory is that they are replacing a mandated by law obligation. There is in statute for 37 Act counties like Orange County a requirement that you pay the pension system annually. And the legal theory is that you have this mandated by law obligation and statute, and you're simply substituting a bond for that existing statute. So that is the underlying legal theory. These are usually validated by a court also.
By statute or the cash from the bonds?
Pardon me?
You're saying we're substituting for the statute. Isn't it the proceeds from the bonds?
Right, that extinguish the statutory obligation,
right,
and you substitute for the long-term bond procedure, you substitute the debt service on the bond for what would have been a statutory obligation to the pension system.
So you can arbitrage then.
But then going to the arbitrage question, absolutely. It's a taxable bond issue. There's no prohibition on arbitrage.
But if it's non-taxable, there is a prohibition.
Then that's where the prohibition
is. Thank you.
There are exceptions and rules, but yes, is for tax-exempt bonds.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Mr. Woolery a question, because I noted that on the last he sent out this memo about these long-term POBs.
Well, actually, very interesting on that memo, and I just wanted to clarify something. I reread that memo after getting Suzanne Lester's email. It never talks about the length of the borrowing in that memo. So to just say it's about long-term, I don't think is completely accurate.
But I didn't get the memo, so I need to get on.
Oh, I because we're Brown Act, I sent it through Suzanne Lester, so it would be given to everybody appropriately. Yeah. So
and you may have received it and not known it because Mr. Woolery replied to the group and the distribution lists have everybody on the committee on it. So it's possible that
I'll get a copy.
Well, my question, Mr. Woolery, why are you against this current POB that we're talking about?
Well, because if you look at the history for the last, I mean, they went back many years, but if you look at like the last 5 to 10 years, OSERS hasn't made their number.
Right.
And, you know, that's based on the, you know, the savings. And if we don't, we're underfunding the pension. I'm about to release this year's CAFR in a few weeks. The unfunded pension liability will go up significantly. And I know that a lot of that is changes of assumptions, but these bonds do affect that negatively if the number is not there. So until we get to, you know, we're 69% funded a little bit, until we get fully funded on the pension, I don't think it's a good tool to use. Is this always a bad tool to use? No, and I think I discussed that at the last meeting. I just don't think this is a good time to use this until we get that pension funding ratio up to a higher level.
We're at 69%. When do you think you're going to be at 100% or 95%?
That would be...
I'm trying to recall. In the last report, it was about 2021, but things have changed. So, and we don't have an updated report from OSERS yet with the current information. But and you don't necessarily need to be at 100% if you're right about the 85% range. And I think we talked a little bit about this at the last meeting, where about the, you know, the actual rate of return and how we had talked with OSERS and Gerard Miller in particular, because we did have that concern, the same concern that Eric has expressed about not meeting that rate of return. And he was comfortable that the 4.5% would be met. And so that was one of the reasons that we made a decision to move forward with the POB. And the other reason, and we talked a little bit about this last time also, was that the $13 million savings. So there is a benefit. You know, we look at both. We look at the savings to the county, and then we do also look at the OSERS unfunded liability and the potential impact there. And in working with OSERS, we were comfortable that we would have that rate of return. And then considering the savings to the county, because otherwise we would have to come up with $13 million, an additional $13 million to make the payment.
But that was my point earlier. You can't look at the $13 million and say that's the number. Underperforms, we're going to have some more money put in.
Well, and that's why we have to look at both. You have to look at the savings to the county, and then even if there's a savings to the county, but you're not going to get that rate of return, we're not assured of that, then, you know, Eric has a valid concern related even to the short-term issuance. But we were comfortable in working with OSERS that we would have that rate of return.
Well, in looking at the point you made that OSERS underfunded or gave us too much of a discount, I'm looking here at this table, and for the last 10 years, and I don't remember exactly what our discount rate was, but it looks to me like four out of the last 10 years, OSERS didn't make what they gave us. But on the other hand, the average is 13, 20%, 18, 11, to 16. So, I mean, I'm not sure I follow your point that OSERS underperformed the discount.
Well, no, because I'm looking at the last 10 years. Yeah. We started these in 2006. The actual rate of return over that period is 6.26 after taking out OSERS expenses. Their assumed rate was 7.57%. So there is a rather large disparity between where it actually performed and what they were assuming. And these are all based on the assumptions. I also would like to point out, at our last meeting, we were going to get $18 million in savings.
Correct.
And now we're down to $13 million. Cool. So that's a $5 million swing there that...
And
I know those are based on estimates, but it's also concerning that we had such a big swing in that potential savings. And I guess the point I made last time is, you know, there is a short-term cash flow positive for the county by doing this. But it also means that since most of OSERS, 75% plus, goes to the county as liability, anything we don't fund now gets tacked onto the back end. So it's kicking the can down the road. And until we get to that 80% level, I am not comfortable supporting these.
And if I just may provide a point of clarification to the committee members, the $18 million is correct. That's the gross savings. And so then the net savings, once you take into account the interest expense and the cost of issuance, which is minimal in this case, is estimated to be $13 million. Mm-hmm.
So even the $13 million could be a go back and forth, up or down.
Exactly.
Well, can you help me with this table here? I'm looking at this table. I couldn't quite figure it out. It says this is the one that's yellow.
Oh, mine's below.
Is there a page number?
Yeah. Any rate, it says here that the discount amount after knocking out the non-participating entities is $17 million. And how does that reconcile with $13 million? Suzanne, it's this one right here, the one with the yellow that lists all of the individual group. And if you go to the bottom, it says the discount amount is set $18 million less $1 million for non-participants, so it's like $17 million. And how does that reconcile with $13 million? Or am I reading this table wrong?
So the discount amount, that center one, if you look on the page 2 of 2, and it says here about $17 million.
Yeah. Is this a dated thing or something?
It could be.
Could be
it
dated.
Could be. Mm-hmm.
It could be from our last meeting or something. Yeah. Okay. All right. I just didn't quite.
And it's an estimate. It's definitely an estimate because we haven't. The gross savings is not an estimate, but the actual net savings is an estimate because we haven't priced at this point.
Maybe our next meeting, you could just give us a quick reconciliation from the 18 down to the 13.
Could it be more than 13? Could it turn out to be more than $13 million? It could.
Yes, if the interest expense doesn't turn out to be
Now, is this commitment of 4.5% set? Did they make a commitment? OSERS made that commitment.
Yes.
And they can't renege between now and January 17th?
I wanted to ask a question on this.
Okay.
If I may ask, how much of a swing would be required for us to not make 13 or to actually lose money on this? How much of a swing in the performance? Are we talking 1%, 0.5%, and 8%? I mean, did we know?
Well, we have a maximum of 2% written into the legal documents, but we don't expect it to be 2%.
Right, but the concern is that if it underperforms, we won't make 13. We could even lose money on this. So what I'm wondering is how much of a swing would be required for that to happen. And I'm just trying to figure the probability or the likelihood of this happening.
Well, we...
You won't know until next year, right? Until they add it on.
That's right. And I guess, you know, just as a point of information, it's difficult to actually go back and pinpoint actually... how our funds are deployed. They're deposited into the pension system mid-January, and then there's a deployment. They're not just taken and plopped into one asset class or one place. There's a strategy by the OSERS chief investment officer that's deployed over time to different asset classes. but
I understand they have their own secret sauce as to how they make their
but they
money.
don't report back to us with the performances on our money.
Not the OSER's portfolio, yes, but not the county pot. But if I may, and it's a simplistic analysis. It's not quite baked, and it's being vetted internally in the CEO's office. But we are working on. It's kind of a simplistic model that shows, okay, over the past 5 years. The deposit into the OSER system, and then we get the portfolio performance report each month,
right.
And we've applied what the portfolio has earned each month for that 18 months, and then compared it to what the discount was, and for the past 5 years. Only last year, the 2015 POBs, using that approach, lost money.
Was that the 0.9? Was it last year that?
Yes.
Yeah.
May I, because we have a miserable record here yet, and I think that it is important that it be in the minutes. And I failed to get this timely, but it's very short. I would ask, Mr. Woolery, you give 5 recommendations as to why this is not a good idea. Could you just briefly summarize your 5 for the record?
Sure. First, we haven't.
You want your memo?
No, I don't.
You don't need it.
No, I think I can do that. And they may be ones that are not on that, because I'm not just going off of GFOA's advisement of why this is or is not a good practice. One, we need to make sure we're fully funded. Usually 80% plus funding is considered fully funded. We're not at that point. Especially as after the election, we've seen a huge correction in the market, by January 17th, and I know OSERS does not deploy this money into the market right away. Could we be in a downward? So we're trying to do market timing when we have a real significant change. 3, just looking at the past, I haven't seen OSERS hit the number. And looking at the savings, the $13 million savings is just one-dimensional. The other side is the future value of the dollars we're not putting in there. We're assuming if OSERS hits their rate of return, that's made whole, and those dollars are there on a go-forward to earn more money to go towards the liability. If they don't, we're losing that future value of those dollars.
But can I interrupt you on that point?
Well, can I get to my last 2 and then I'll be happy to do that.
And you can interrupt him.
Second, if you look at the current state of the unfunded liability, it's going north, not south. So that's, if I have a liability that's going up, I'd rather see that going down before we use a tool like this, because I understand the benefit of the saving. And then last is the percentage of payroll of the contribution rates. That's going up, and that's a function of the unfunded liability. And as that's unfunded, that continues to go up, which means that's eating away funds that could go for other county expenses. Mm-hmm. So, sorry. Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Before Member Hammond goes ahead, unfortunately, I have another meeting to go to. I am supportive of going forward with this. I don't know if it's premature to call a vote, or my vote could be registered in some way if I unfortunately need to step out. I am supportive of it.
I guess I'm going to look over at our council.
I don't feel comfortable in calling the vote till all comments and questions are vetted.
Okay. We had this whole discussion last meeting.
Not really.
We're going over the same terrain.
This is new stuff.
We had this discussion. I'm very comfortable supporting it. We went through everything last meeting. People know where they're at. And unfortunately, I have to, if I have to abstain, I can do that too, of course. But I'm fully comfortable given what I've heard and going through this over the last few months supporting it. So you
whatever,
but happy if it's better for me to abstain either way.
Or you could stay for 10 minutes.
I can't. I must leave. I am so sorry.
Okay.
I see our council is looking at our bylaws.
Sorry to stop the moment.
Just abstain.
Just abstain. That's all.
Just abstain. Is that okay? Okay.
But Mr. Woolery, you say that it's going up, In the last 10 years, it went up, the funding ratio improved. It's been 68, if this table is correct. It says it's 68.7 and now it's 71.2. So why do you say it's going south, the funding ratio?
Because the liability is going up.
Well, what does this column say then?
And we're still not at 80%. So
so you think 80%?
We're going south in that the liability is going north. We're having significant increases to the unfunded liability.
But doesn't the funding ratio take the liability into consideration?
Well, it takes that plus the portfolio.
Well, I guess the problem I have, well, yeah, of course. But I mean, it's not deteriorating. It's, if anything, it's slightly improving. But the alternative.
And my point earlier was this would be a good tool if we were at considered full funding, which we're not. We're about 10% below.
Is your issue. Now, the alternative, as I understand from our last meeting, Mrs. Friedrich said that I said, well, the present value of not doing this, in other words, what's the impact of not doing this? What does Mrs. Friedrich make on our money? And she says about 1%. Is that a fair statement?
Less than 1%. We are right now at 0.78.
Yeah, because it's all short term. So the alternative is losing that positive arbitrage.
Or to put another $13 million into funding the pension liability, which will have future dollars as it earns more revenue from the return on investment over a 20, 30-year period.
So you're recommending not doing the bond and putting $13 million in?
Additional monies into the pension, yeah.
Does anybody agree with that?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I would have great concerns about that. For example, Mr. Woolery, the savings to your department is $350,000. And so just as an example, you know, that's about the cost of 3-4 positions that, you know, potentially we would not be able to fund next year because we would be having to contribute that to OSERS instead. So I think there's dollar amounts by department. It's about $1.2 million for our district attorney's office. We already struggle to balance our budget. So for us, the savings, and like I said, we balanced. We looked at both the savings to the county, and we're comfortable with the 4.5%. The 4.5% is not the 7.25. So we're not even saying, and OSERS wasn't even saying that we're going to necessarily meet the 7.25, as long as you meet the 4.5. And we're looking longer term also. If you look at, like Mr. Hammond looked at the numbers, and over time, you're not negative each year. So you may have a bad year, but then you may, the next year, we had double-digit rate of return. So you're making up for that over time. So we're looking over 10-year.
We had a 0.09.
Correct. And that's.
So what do we have to do? Triple, quadruple that?
And that was Mr. Woolery's point, right? That was an anomaly. That was a very bad year, right? But looking long-term, and this is what Mr. Miller did, was look over time, the 10-year, the 20-year, because the unfunded liability is amortized over a 20-year period. So we're not just looking at today.
Yes, but 0.09 is reality, right?
No, it's not, because you got to take the last 10 years.
No. Last year it was 0.09.
Well, and it's actually not 0.09. Once you take out OSER's expenses for doing business, it was negative, 0.11%.
What is the cost of this funding?
And just if I could add, it's not just the 12-month annual rate. It's over 18 months. And as I was mentioning, it was only last year, but the last year of the 5 years that we've done this, where and just, you know, going back to my model, the gain for the 2014 POBs was over $8 million. The 2013 POBs was over $17 million. The 2012 was over $7 million. So,
and what was 11?
I only went back 5 years.
Because that next year it was 0.74. Yeah, right. And the one after that you were just reading was 12.26.
Right.
So, yeah, you didn't pick up the year before, which was, what, another anomaly.
I only had time to go back 5 years.
Well, I'm not being critical of that.
I understand.
What is the cost of this issuance? What are we spending to do this?
about $5 million. That's the interest cost.
So no, what would the cost be? What would the cost be? Not the interest. We don't do it. We don't have any interest costs. What is the carrying cost for the professionals and whatever out of pocket we are to do this?
About $60,000.
An interest cost of $5 million. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments, questions?
Well, I think that I guess I'm having a hard time understanding Mr. Woolery's point. I guess the primary point that I got is that we shouldn't be at 71% funding ratio. We should be at 80. That's your key.
Well, we're at 69 as opposed to 80. Yes.
It says 71.2 here, but that was last year. So, yeah. So your point is that we shouldn't be doing these bonds and taking in this income until we get to 80%. What is?
Well, I mean, but you can't even, you know, 80% plus we're going into a good market, because part of this is market timing as well. So right. Just to say, oh, at 80% we should start doing these would be kind of mischaracterizing my point as well.
But basically, we're spending our savings, whatever the $13
well,
million.
We're kicking the can down the road.
You're down here, she's saying, I can give you four more people. If we do this, we're going to fund three more people.
I wouldn't be giving him four more people. We would be basically say exact thing.
Yeah, I understand that. But what we're spending our savings is what we're doing.
No, that's not true at all. Because what we're doing, we have the alternative is Sherry makes less than 1%. Or we get 4.5%. Now, if we undershoot it or overshoot it, there's consequences. I understand that. But the history of this 5 years is that we've come out ahead.
Except for the most volatile time that we've been in history.
And, you know,
basically in history in the last 10 years, not knowing what's going to happen in the next couple of years due to certain political changes. And other factors, and worldwide factors, and worldwide.
Well, there's always that.
Yeah, but we are in a very interesting time, to say the least.
And so, if I could just add to the conversation, or kind of summarize what we've talked about, you know, the county, you know, is balancing providing, you know, services to its residents, but being fiscally responsible, and this savings is a real savings to assist the county in providing services and moving forward initiatives to its residents. Now, at the same time, we feel like that we have done our due diligence, speaking with the retirement system, talking to the Board of Retirement who voted on this, and, you know, the Board of Retirement has, you know, Board of Supervisor appointees. They're an independent unit from the County of Orange. So the County of Orange, you know, CEO's office does not tell them what to do. They have a chief investment officer and a staff that analyzed and came up that 4.5% was reasonable and realistic. It's not the assumed rate of return of 7.25%. And, you know, we applaud them for that, because we think dropping that to 4.5% is reasonable and realistic. But even that 4.5% prepayment discount is very meaningful to the county in moving forward its initiatives and providing services to the residents.
Did we have a motion that lost in the discussion? Is there a motion?
Yeah,
we had two from the time before.
You did. We motioned to talk about this.
We motioned to talk about it. Any further questions? I'm going to call a roll call vote on this.
They have to be here,
if we may. Any further discussion? Okay. I'm going to call the question. Mr. Moore, how do you vote?
I'm torn on this one. I'm going to vote yes.
Mr. Rodecker.
I'm inclined to vote no. I like the idea of saving money, but I'm concerned about the risk. And Mr. Woolery makes some very good arguments, so no.
Mr. Groner abstained. Ms. Friedenreich is not on the board. Mr. Woolery?
No.
Mr. Hammond?
Yes.
Twenty years ago, I was in the same position on the pension obligation bonds. And for the same reasons that Mr. Woolery elicited, I'm voting no.
So it didn't pass?
It did not pass.
The Board of Supervisors will find that very interesting, I think.
Yes.
That's why they appoint us.
Seeing him in half an hour, I'll tell him.
My discussions with members of the Board of Supervisors that they appoint advisory bodies to do a job and to give an independent analysis, and they have not been disappointed with the board's performances overall in the county and what the citizens have done to assist the Board of Supervisors. So I think they will find it interesting, and they will see that government does work. Is there any other matter that we have? Public comments. Any public comments? With that, we wish you all a very happy holidays, and we'll see you at the next meeting.
That was an interesting